Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
This is continuous coverage.
Continuous coverage.
Continuous coverage.
In the trial of Lori Vallow Daybill from the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hidden Killers podcast.
That it is. And we take you now to the courtroom for day number one. Opening statements of the trial of Lori Vallow Daybill.
All right. We will go on the record on this matter. Case CR 22-211624, State of Idaho versus Lori Noreen Vallow. This is the time scheduled for jury trial. Court would note the prosecution is here as well as the defense, and the defendant will do more formal introductions here in a moment. The court would note a couple of things. I think the parties have already been advised, as well as all those in attendance. There are some conduct orders that are in effect, both governing conduct within the building pursuant to an administrative order of Administrative District Judge Hippler, as well as a courtroom conduct order that I've issued for both this courtroom 400, as well as the locations where the simulcast is taking place here in Ada County, as well as in Madison County. Importantly, in this courtroom, courtroom 400, I wanted to reemphasize that no reentry is allowed if you leave during the proceedings. There will be scheduled breaks in the morning and the afternoon and a lunch break, but if for some reason you need to leave while the case is going, then likely you will not be permitted to return to your seat. And secondly, and I will note that in those other simulcast locations, that is not the case. So parties can come and go from those rooms or observers. On the electronic devices, no electronic devices are allowed in these proceedings in any of the locations I just mentioned to record, photograph, or transmit any sounds or images while this trial is going. So there is, of course, a record being kept every day through the administrative process of the courts, and that will contain the court's audio for purposes of the record of the case. At this point, I'll just briefly inquire, is the state ready to proceed at this time and have the jury brought in?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, thank you, Ms. Blake. Is the defense ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Archibald. At this point, then, Mr. Bailiff, if you'd please bring the jurors in.
Jury's all present, counted for, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Bailiff. Thank you, and please be seated.
Thank you.
All right. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the jury. First off, apologies for holding you so long in the jury room there. We had a very serious technical issue that arose this morning that delayed the proceedings from starting for a bit. However, we very much appreciate you all reporting in on time today. I'll note on the record also for the purposes of counsel to know that each one of the jurors signed their affirmation that they were provided with when they left for the weekend last week. So with that, I'll begin with a roll call and welcome of the case. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming this morning. You have been seated as jurors in the case now before us. My name is Stephen W. Boyce, and I'm the district judge for Fremont County, and I'm in charge of the courtroom in this trial. The court clerk is Shannon Holstein, who's seated to my right, and she keeps minutes of these trial proceedings. She'll mark the trial exhibits and administer oaths to you as jurors and to the witnesses. The bailiffs here, Deputies Ravello, Bache, and Holmes, are assisting me in maintaining courtroom order and working with the jury. Our court reporter is Patty Bath, who is seated down below me, and she's taking a stenographic record of everything said during these trial proceedings. Courtney Stallings is my staff attorney, seated over by the window to my right, and she will be assisting me from time to time with legal issues that may arise in the case. The call to jury duty is a high and noble calling. As Thomas Jefferson once said, trial by jury is the anchor of all liberties. Therefore, no one should avoid fulfilling this obligation except under the most pressing circumstances. This call upon your time does not frequently come to you, but it is an important obligation of your citizenship in this state and country. Service on a jury is a civic and patriotic obligation that all good citizens should perform. Service on a jury affords you an opportunity to be part of the judicial process by which the legal affairs and liberties of fellow citizens are determined and protected under our form of government. You have been asked to perform one of the most challenging duties of citizenship, that is, to sit in judgment on facts that will determine the guilt or innocence of the persons involved. For many of you, unless you have served or will serve in the armed forces of our nation, this may be the highest duty of citizenship you will ever perform. Each one of you has been qualified, examined, and selected to serve as a juror of this court. The clerk will now call the roll of the jury. Madam Clerk.
Juror number one.
Here.
Juror number two.
Here.
Juror number three.
Here.
Juror number four.
Here.
Juror number five.
Here.
Juror number six.
Here.
Juror number seven.
Here.
Juror number eight.
Here.
Juror number nine.
Here.
Juror number 10.
Here.
Juror number 11.
Here.
Juror number 12.
Here.
Juror number 13.
Here.
Juror number 14.
Here.
Juror number 15.
Here.
Juror number 16.
Here.
Juror number 17.
Here.
Juror number 18.
Here.
All right. Thank you, Madam Clerk. The court will note that the jurors are all present and properly seated. This case has been brought by the state of Idaho. I'll sometimes refer to the state as the prosecution. The state is represented at this trial by Lindsay Blake, if you'd please stand. Is the prosecutor for Fremont County. Rob Wood is the prosecutor for Madison County. Thank you. And Rachel Smith is a specially appointed deputy prosecutor assisting in this case. The defendant, Lori Noreen Vallow, is represented by her attorney, Jim Archibald, and her attorney, John Thomas. Thank you, counsel. This case is a criminal matter, which means the defendant is charged by the state of Idaho with a violation of the law. I'll now provide you with a brief summary of the indictment, which sets forth the charges against the defendant. The indictment is not to be considered as evidence. It is merely a formal description of the charges against the defendant. You must not consider it as evidence of guilt, and you must not be influenced by the fact that a charge has been filed. With regard to the defendant, the state of Idaho alleges that Lori Noreen Vallow committed the crimes of count one, conspiracy to commit first degree murder and grand theft by deception, count two, first degree murder, count three, conspiracy to commit first degree murder and grand theft by deception, count four, first degree murder, count five, conspiracy to commit first degree murder, count seven, grand theft. The defendant has pled not guilty to all of the charges. Please remember this is simply a description of charges. It is not evidence. Under our law, and system of justice, every defendant is presumed to be innocent. This means two things. First, the state has the burden of proving the defendant guilty. The state has that burden throughout the trial. The defendant is never required to prove her innocence, nor does the defendant ever have to produce any evidence at all. Second, the state must prove the alleged crime beyond a reasonable doubt. A reasonable doubt is not a mere possible or imaginary doubt. It is a doubt based on reason and common sense. It may arise from a careful and impartial consideration of all the evidence or from lack of evidence. If, after considering all the evidence, you have a reasonable doubt about the defendant's guilt, you must find the defendant not guilty. The duty of the jury is to determine the facts and then apply the law set forth in the instructions I will later give you to those facts. In this way, you will decide the case. In applying the court's instructions as to the controlling law, you must follow those instructions regardless of your opinion of what the law is or what the law should be or what any lawyer may state the law to be. During the course of this trial, including the jury selection process, you've been instructed that you are not to discuss this case amongst yourselves with anyone else, including the use of email, text messaging, tweeting, blogging, electronic bulletin boards, or any other form of communication, electronic or otherwise. Do not conduct any personal investigation or look up any information from any source, including the internet. Do not form an opinion as to the merits of the case until after the case has been submitted to you for your determination. At this time, then, I will have Madam Clerk please swear the jurors under oath.
Rise and raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that you will try the cause now on trial and a true verdict render herein according to the law and the evidence? So help you God.
Yes.
Thank you. Please be seated. Court will note on the record all jurors properly received the oath. I'll next discuss our trial procedures with you. In terms of the hours we're going to be running, typically we'll be starting at 8:30 each day and going through trial until 3:30 with a lunch break. We'll try to keep the lunch break at under an hour in order to provide you some time after trial each day to attend to your personal affairs. We'll generally be having a mid-morning break for 10 to 15 minutes and a break also in the afternoon after lunch. If you need any special accommodations, please contact the bailiffs and we'll let the jury commissioner know that as well. During the trial, your seating where you now are, you will remain seated in those same assigned seats throughout the duration of the trial. That consistent seating helps the court and counsel become familiar with you as jurors and become readily aware if a certain juror is not present. I appreciate everyone being punctual today. Please continue to do that, and we'll do our best to be punctual as well and get things started on time so we can end on time each day. If you do have any situation preventing you from appearing on time, please immediately contact the courts in the morning and advise us of what's happening, and we'll assist any way we can. At times, this trial may be interrupted or delayed due to the necessity of the court or counsel to attend to other unexpected matters. These interruptions and delays are generally short in duration, and every effort is made to resume the trial quickly. During short delays, you'll be required to stay in the courthouse, and the bailiff will escort you to the jury room. If the delay appears to require a longer amount of time, you may be dismissed for the day with instructions of when you would need to, with instructions of when you would be required to return. As you're probably now aware, having been here multiple days, we do have restrooms available here for your convenience. If any of you have any special needs during your jury service, please communicate that to the bailiff, and we will do our best to take care of that. The compensation set by Idaho statute, Idaho Code 2-215, $10 per day. We always admonish people, don't spend that whole $10 all at once in one place. So that's your service payment. In regards to your cell phones, you're permitted to have those here with you, but please don't refer or look to those while the court is in session. If you need to use them during breaks, you're permitted to do that with all the other instructions and admonishments you've been given, and please plan accordingly for that. Also, from time to time during the trial, you may see me looking at my computer, and that's generally looking at information on the case or perhaps communicating with other court personnel. So at this time, the court will now provide its preliminary instructions, and after that, we'll have opening statements. Jury instruction number one. Now that you have been sworn as jurors to try this case, I want to go over with you what will be happening. I'll describe how the trial will be conducted and what we'll be doing. At the end of the trial, I'll give you more detailed guidance on how you are to reach your decision. Because the state has the burden of proof, it goes first. After the state's opening statement, the defense may make an opening statement or may wait until the state has presented its case. The state will offer evidence that it says will support the charges against the defendant. The defense may then present evidence, but is not required to do so. If the defense does present evidence, the state may then present rebuttal evidence. This is evidence offered to answer the defense's evidence. After you have heard all the evidence, I will give you additional instructions on the law. After you have heard the instructions, the state and the defense will each be given time for closing arguments. In their closing arguments, they will summarize the evidence to help you understand how it relates to the law. Just as the opening statements are not evidence, neither are the closing arguments. After the closing arguments, you will then leave the courtroom together to make your decision. During your deliberations, you will have my instructions, the exhibit submitted into evidence, and any notes taken by you in court. Instruction number two. The defendant is charged by the state of Idaho with a violation of law. The charges against the defendant are contained in the indictment. The indictment is simply a description of the charge. It is not evidence. Jury instruction number three. It is alleged that the crimes charged were committed on or about or on or between a certain date. If you find a crime was committed, the proof need not show that it was committed on that precise date. Jury instruction number four. Under our law and system of justice, the defendant is presumed to be innocent. The presumption of innocence means two things. First, the state has the burden of proving the defendant guilty. The state has that burden throughout the trial. The defendant is never required to prove her innocence, nor does the defendant ever have to produce any evidence at all. Second, the state must prove the alleged crime beyond a reasonable doubt. A reasonable doubt is not a mere possible or imaginary doubt. It is a doubt based on reason and common sense. It may arise from a careful and impartial consideration of all the evidence or from lack of evidence. If after considering all the evidence you have a reasonable doubt about the defendant's guilt, you must find the defendant not guilty. Jury instruction number five. A defendant in a criminal trial has a constitutional right not to be compelled to testify. The decision whether to testify is left to the defendant, acting with the advice and assistance of the defendant's lawyers. You must not draw any inference of guilt from the fact that the defendant may not testify, nor should this fact be discussed by you or enter into your deliberations in any way. Jury instruction number six. If during the trial I may say or do anything which suggests to you that I am inclined to favor the claims or positions of any party, you will not permit yourself to be influenced by any such suggestion. I will not express nor intend to express, nor will I intend to intimate, any opinion as to which witnesses are or are not worthy of belief, what facts are or are not established, or what inferences should be drawn from the evidence. If any expression of mine seems to indicate an opinion relating to any of these matters, I'll instruct you to disregard it. Jury instruction number seven. Your duties are to determine the facts, apply the law set forth in my instructions to those facts, and in this way to decide the case. In so doing, you must follow my instructions regardless of your own opinion of what the law is or should be, or what either side may state the law to be. You must consider them as a whole, not picking out one and disregarding others. The order in which the instructions are given has no significance as to their relative importance. The law requires that your decision be made solely upon the evidence before you. Neither sympathy nor prejudice should influence you in your deliberations. Faithful performance by you of these duties is vital to the administration of justice. In determining the facts, you may consider only the evidence admitted in this trial. This evidence consists of the testimony of the witnesses, the exhibits offered and received, and any stipulated or admitted facts. The production of evidence in court is governed by rules of law. At times during the trial, an objection may be made to a question asked a witness or to a witness's answer or to an exhibit. This simply means I am being asked to decide a particular rule of law. Arguments on the admissibility of evidence are designed to aid the court and are not to be considered by you nor affect your deliberations. If I sustain an objection to a question or to an exhibit, the witness may not answer the question or the exhibit may not be considered. Do not attempt to guess what the answer might have been or what the exhibit might have shown. Similarly, if I tell you not to consider a particular statement or exhibit, you should put it out of your mind and should not refer to it or rely on it in your later deliberations. During the trial, I may have to talk with the parties about the rules of law which should apply in this case. Sometimes we talk over at the side with that white noise device that prevents others from hearing. Other times, you'll be excused from the courtroom so we can have you be more comfortable while we work out those legal issues. You are not to speculate about any such discussions. They are necessary from time to time and help the trial run smoothly. Some of you have probably heard the terms, quote, circumstantial evidence, end quote, direct evidence, end quote, and, quote, hearsay evidence, end quote. Do not be concerned with these terms. You are to consider all the evidence admitted in this trial. However, the law does not require you to believe all the evidence. As the sole judges of the facts, you must determine what evidence you believe and what weight you attach to it. There is no magical formula by which one may evaluate testimony. You bring with you to this courtroom all of the experience and background of your lives. In your everyday affairs, you determine for yourselves whom you believe, what you believe, and how much weight you attach to what you are told. The same considerations that you use in your everyday dealings in making these decisions are the considerations which you should apply in your deliberations. In deciding what you believe, do not make your decision simply because more witnesses may have testified one way than the other. Your role is to think about the testimony of each witness you have heard and decide how much you believe of what the witness had to say. A witness who has special knowledge in a particular matter may give an opinion on that matter. In determining the weight to be given such opinion, you should consider the qualifications and credibility of the witness and reasons given for the opinion. You are not bound by such opinion. Give it the weight, if any, to which you deem it entitled. Jury instruction number 8. Do not concern yourself with the subject of penalty or punishment. That subject must not in any way affect your verdict. If you find the defendant guilty, it will be my duty to determine the appropriate penalty or punishment. Jury instruction number 9. If you wish, you may take notes to help you remember what witnesses said. If you do take notes, please keep them to yourself until after you and your fellow jurors go to the jury room to decide the case. You should not let note-taking distract you so that you do not hear other answers by witnesses. When you leave at night, you'll be asked to leave your notes in the jury room. If you do take notes, you should rely on your own memory of what was said and not be overly influenced by the notes of other jurors. In addition, you cannot assign to one person the duty of taking notes for all of you. Finally, jury instruction number 10. It is important that as jurors and officers of this court, you obey the following instructions at any time you leave the jury box, whether it be for recesses of the court during the day or when you leave the courtroom to go home at night. First, do not talk about the case either among yourselves or with anyone else during the course of the trial. You should keep an open mind throughout the trial and not form or express any opinion about the case. You should only reach your decision after you have heard all the evidence, after you've heard my final instructions, and after the final arguments. You may discuss this case with the other members of the jury only after it is submitted to you for your decision. All such discussions should take place in the jury room. Second, do not let any person talk to you about the case in your presence. If anyone does talk about it, tell them you're a juror in the case. If they won't stop talking, report that to the bailiff as soon as you're able to do so. You should not tell any of your fellow jurors about what has happened. Third, during this trial, do not talk with any of the parties, their lawyers, or any witnesses. By this, I mean not only do not talk about the case, but do not talk at all, even to pass the time of day. In no other way can all parties be assured of the fairness to which they are entitled and to expect from you as jurors. Fourth, during this trial, do not make any investigation of this case or inquiry outside the courtroom on your own. Do not go to any place mentioned in the testimony without an explicit order from me to do so. Don't consult any books, dictionaries, encyclopedias, or any other source of information unless I specifically authorize you to do so. And fifth, do not read about the case in newspapers. Do not listen to radio or television broadcasts about the trial. You must base your verdict solely on what is presented in court and not upon any newspaper, radio, television, or other account of what may have happened. Each day you will be required to sign an affidavit affirming that you have followed this admonition. All right, at this time, the clerk will read the indictment and state the defendant's plea. Madam Clerk.
The District Court of the 7th Judicial District of the State of Idaho, in and for the County of Fremont. State of Idaho Plaintiff versus Lori Noreen Ballow, a.k.a. Lori Noreen Day Bell, case number CR22211624, indictment.
I apologize. I think we need to have you talk into the microphone. Do you have one right there? Could you come and just talk to this one? It looks like we might have one here. So, thanks. If you don't mind, thank you.
In the District Court of the 7th Judicial District of the State of Idaho, in and for the County of Fremont, State of Idaho Plaintiff versus Lori Noreen Ballow, a.k.a. Lori Noreen Daybell, Defendant. Case number CR22211624. Indictment. Lori Noreen Ballow is accused by the grand jury of Fremont County by this indictment as follows. Count 1, conspiracy to commit first-degree murder and grand theft by deception. The defendants, Chad Guy Daybell, Lori Noreen Ballow, and Alex Cox, deceased, and other co-conspirators, both known and unknown, on or between the dates of October 26, 2018, and continuing until January 15, 2020, in the County of Madison, State of Idaho, and elsewhere, including Fremont County, Idaho, and as part of a continuing criminal transaction and common scheme or plan in Madison and Fremont Counties, Idaho, did willfully and knowingly combine, conspire, confederate, and agree to commit murder in the first degree of Tylee Ryan and to commit grand theft by deception. Count 2, first degree murder. The defendant, Lori Noreen Ballow, on or between the 8th and 9th day of September 2019 in the County of Madison, State of Idaho, and as part of a common scheme or plan or continuing criminal transaction between Madison and Fremont counties in Idaho, were concerned in the commission of a first degree murder and did aid and abet in its commission, or, not being present, advised and encouraged its commission, or by command compelled another to commit the crime, and did so with malice aforethought, and did so willfully, deliberately, and with premeditation, which resulted in the death of a human being, to wit, did either kill Tylee Ryan and or assist in the killing of Tylee Ryan, and or did encourage the killing of Tylee Ryan, and or did command another to kill Tylee Ryan in violation of Idaho Code Sections 18-4001, 18-204, 18-4003, sub A. Count 3, conspiracy to commit first-degree murder and grand theft by deception. The defendants, Chad Guy Daybell, Lori Noreen Vallow, and Alex Cox, deceased, and other co-conspirators, both known and unknown, on or between the dates of October 26, 2018, and continuing until January 15, 2020, in the County of Madison, State of Idaho, and elsewhere, including Fremont County, Idaho, and as part of a continuing criminal transaction and common scheme or plan in Madison and Fremont counties, Idaho, did willfully and knowingly combine, conspire, confederate, and agree to commit murder in the first degree of Joshua Jackson Vallow, hereinafter J.J. Vallow, and to commit grand theft by deception. Count 4, first degree murder. The defendant, Lori Noreen Vallow, on or between the 22nd and 23rd day of September 2019 in the County of Madison, State of Idaho, and as part of a common scheme or plan or continuing criminal transaction between Madison and Fremont counties in Idaho, was concerned in the commission of first degree murder and did aid and abet in its commission, or not being present, advised and encouraged its commission, or by command compelled another to commit the crime, and did so with malice aforethought, and did so willfully, deliberately, and with premeditation, which resulted in the death of a human being, to wit, did either kill J.J. Vallow and or assist in the killing of J.J. Vallow, and or did encourage the killing of J.J. Vallow, and or did command another to kill J.J. Vallow, in violation of Idaho Code Sections 18-4001, 18-204, and 18-4003 sub A. Count 5, conspiracy to commit first degree murder. That the defendants, Chad Guy Daybell, Lori Noreen Vallow, and Alex Cox, deceased, on or about October 1st, 2018, through January 15th, 2020, in the County of Fremont, State of Idaho, and elsewhere, including Madison County, and as part of a continuing transaction and common scheme or plan in Fremont Counties, Idaho, did willfully and knowingly combine, conspire, confederate, and agree to commit murder in the first degree of Tammy Daybell, did combine or conspire to commit murder, and one or more of such persons did enact to effect the object of the combination or conspiracy. Count 7, grand theft. That the defendant, Lori Noreen Vallow, on or between the dates of October 1, 2019 and January 22, 2020, in the County of Madison, State of Idaho, did, as a common scheme or plan or continuing criminal transaction between Madison and Fremont Counties, Idaho, by deceit and with the intent to deprive another of property or to appropriate the same to herself or to a third person, wrongfully take, obtain, or withhold, or aid and abet another to take, obtain, or withhold the property of another, to wit, Social Security survivor benefits allocated for Tylee Ryan and J.J. Vallow, and Social Security child in care benefits allocated for Lori Noreen Vallow in an amount exceeding $1,000, which said funds Lori Noreen Vallow was not entitled and which did belong to the government of the United States of America. This is signed as a true bill this 24th day of May, 2021. Deputy Presiding Grand Juror, Acting Presiding Grand Juror, Fremont County, State of Idaho. To these charges, the defendant has entered a plea of not guilty.
All right. Thank you, Madam Clerk, for reading the indictment. Again, I'll remind the jurors the indictment is simply a description of the charges. It is not evidence. So at this point, then, this will be the time for the opening statements. Ms. Blake, I understand that you will be making opening statements on behalf of the state. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
All right. Are you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, Ms. Blake, then you can commence with your opening statement.
Thank you.
money, power, and sex. That's what this case is about. The defendant, Lori Vallow Daybell, used money, power, and sex, or the promise of those things, to get what she wanted. What she wanted was money, power, and sex. It didn't matter what obstacle she had to remove to get what she wanted. It didn't matter if the obstacle was a thing or a person. And if it was a person, it didn't matter who. Tylee Ryan was a vibrant young woman, 17 years old, a whole life ahead of her. She was just about to enter into adulthood and make her own way in the world. Who knows what she would have become? Tylee had already lost her father, and she received Social Security benefits because of that. Tylee had money. Lori wanted it. Tylee's gone. Joshua Jackson Vallow, lovingly known by friends and family as JJ, was a 7-year-old, vibrant, happy-go-lucky little boy. He had most of his childhood and his whole life ahead of him. But JJ was tough. He's a 7-year-old. He took a lot of time and effort and energy to care for. That time, effort, and energy took away from the defendant doing what she wanted to do, and from the defendant being with Chad Daybell and devoting her time and attention to him. JJ had also lost his father. And when JJ lost his father, he became even that much more difficult to care for, no longer a second parent to help. Not only that, JJ also was entitled to Social Security benefits. The defendant didn't want to have to take care of JJ anymore. She wanted the money. JJ's gone. Tamara Douglas Daybell, known by friends and family as Tammy, a 49-year-old mother of five, a grandmother, a computer whiz by all accounts. She was married to Chad Daybell. The defendant wanted Chad all to herself. Chad was the beneficiary of a life insurance policy for Tammy. Lori wanted those things. Tammy's gone. Tylee was last seen on September 8th of 2019. She had just relocated with her mother to Rexburg, Idaho on or about September 1st of 2019. And 7 days later is the last sighting, known sighting of Tylee. The next time Tylee is seen is on June 9th of 2020. She's found buried in a shallow grave on Chad Daybell's property. And when I say she's found, what I mean is what was left of Tylee was found. Charred remains. That's what was left of Tylee. You will hear it described as a mass of bone and tissue. That's what was left of this beautiful young woman, the defendant's daughter. You will also hear how Tylee's DNA was recovered on a pickaxe and shovel located in a shed on defendant Daybell's property. JJ was last seen on September 22nd of 2019 at the defendant's apartment in Rexburg, Idaho. Last time JJ was seen, he was with his uncle, Alex Cox, the defendant's brother. You'll hear from a witness that he saw Alex Cox carrying JJ. JJ's head on his shoulder appeared to be a peaceful scene. Appeared JJ was sleeping at that time. JJ was not seen again until June 9th of 2020, when he was also found in a shallow grave on the defendant's property. JJ was found wrapped in garbage bags with duct tape around him. He had duct tape around his head. He had duct tape around his arms, taping them into a position like this. That's how the defendant's little boy was found. You will hear what a difficult scene that was to process. Law enforcement had been searching for these children since November of 2019. And even the most veteran law enforcement officers you'll hear from were disturbed by the scene. Some may have still been holding out hope against all odds that we'd find these children alive, but this wasn't what they expected to find. Tammy was last seen alive on the night of October 18th of 2019. Her son left to work. She was home alone with Chad Daybell on that night. On the morning of October 19th, just before 6 a.m., a 911 call is placed. Tammy's dead. She's cold and she's stiff. What we know is by the time law enforcement showed up, Chad Daybell had moved her body. Chad Daybell gives a description that Tammy wasn't feeling well, she'd been sick. Very few other witnesses report any concerns about Tammy's health. And mind you, at the time law enforcement show up at Tammy's death, when it's been reported, it's unknown at that time about JJ and Tylee missing. It's unknown that Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell are in any kind of a relationship. So nothing about Tammy's death is initially deemed to be suspicious. You will hear that the defendant was in Hawaii at the time Tammy died. And you will also hear that less than 3 weeks later, 17 days to be exact, the defendant and Chad Daybell were back in Hawaii. They were getting married on a sunny beach in Hawaii, dancing and celebrating their life together, while Tylee and JJ were cold in the ground in shallow graves, and while Tammy had just barely been laid to rest in the Springville, Utah cemetery, her hometown. The missing children, the sudden death of Tammy, the quick marriage of Chad and the defendant left so many questions for those still grieving the loss of Tammy and those still wondering 24/7 about the whereabouts and safety of the children. You will also hear how the defendant had switched Tylee's money from Tylee's JP Morgan Chase account to go into the defendant's BBVA account on or about August 16th of 2019. Tylee went missing on September 8th of 2019. You will also hear how she had begun receiving benefits on JJ's behalf approximately a month before he was last seen. And you will hear how she continued to collect those benefits and that money to fund her lifestyle. You are going to hear a lot of different dates and events that occurred on those dates, phone calls that were placed on those dates, messages that were sent, financial transactions that occurred. The reason you're going to hear about so many dates and so many events is because I've talked about dates in 2019 and 2020. This case actually starts in October of 2018. In October of 2018, the defendant met Chad Daybell for the first time. You'll hear that she had read his books. She was a fan of his. But she traveled to a Preparing the People conference in St. George, Utah. She traveled there with her friends, Melanie Gibb and Sulema Pestenis. These are two women that you will hear more about, and you will hear from them during this trial. When she traveled there with them, she met Chad for the first time. You'll hear it described that there appeared to be some kind of an instant connection. The two of them talked a lot. The defendant was flirty. But what you will also hear is that during this first meeting, the defendant and Chad decide that they share purported religious beliefs, and that they share beliefs that the two of them had been here, had been married before in a prior probation. You will hear it talked about multi-creations or a prior probation or a prior life. But regardless of the term used, what they began to tell others is that they were essentially meant to be together. They'd been married in prior lives, prior probations. Not only that, but they both said that they had been prior figures from or persons from the Bible or other religious references. This will include that they designated themselves as James and Elena. And you will hear that they pursued this line of thought and they pursued these teachings to others to the extent that Chad Daybell wrote a story, the James and Elena story for Lori, for the defendant. And you will hear through testimony how that story mirrored some true life events that were going on between the defendant and Chad Daybell. And at the time they met, it's important to remember, they were both married to other people. Their spouses were both alive and well when they first met. But again, remember, the defendant will remove any obstacle in her way to get what she wants. And she wanted Chad Daybell. She had decided that. Soon after that first meeting in October of 2018, you will hear how the defendants began communicating regularly. Their relationship moved quickly. You will hear how Chad traveled to Arizona that next month in November of 2018. He traveled for a conference, but the defendant also held a gathering at her house, and Chad Daybell was present. You will hear how shortly after, the defendant, with the help of Chad Daybell, began telling people and purporting religious beliefs and teaching people about a rating system of light and dark. The defendant told others that, with the help of Chad, she could rate people as light or dark. And pretty soon this theory evolved and these teachings evolved. And they started to say, well, if somebody's dark, an evil spirit or an evil entity can come in and they can push the real person out and take over the body. And the defendant and Chad Daybell talked about how you would get rid of these evil spirits. So the first thing they did was the defendant would lead castings. And you'll hear the castings described a little different by different witnesses, but with the idea being that there was prayer and energy work. They wouldn't have to be near the person that they were casting on, but they would get together and pray or do energy work to get rid of this evil spirit. You will also hear that these castings, time and time again, didn't work. But you'll hear that these teachings evolved. And they evolved to, well, a person could be so dark or a spirit could be so evil that the person actually becomes a zombie. You can't cast a zombie out. But a common theme was the body had to be destroyed. The defendant and Chad used their self-proclaimed religious beliefs and teachings to justify their actions to others. Their actions from an affair to murder. This was especially true with regards to the defendant's brother, Alex Cox. You will hear how Alex and the defendant had an extremely close relationship. Alex would do anything for Lori. And you'll hear how when Alex would do anything for Lori, when she uprooted her life in Arizona on or about September 1st of 2019 and moved up to Idaho and moved to Rexburg to be closer to Chad, that Alex quit his job and moved up to Rexburg with her. If Chad and Lori ask it, Alex did it. You will also hear how Alex Cox was taught by both the defendant and Chad Daybell that his purpose in this probation or this life or this creation, whichever term they use, was to protect Lori. He was a warrior and he was here to protect Lori. When the defendant would talk about people being light and dark, she talked about her own daughter, Tylee, being dark. She told people this, and there's messages that she sent regarding this. But what you won't hear is anything about the defendant doing anything when Tylee went missing. There were no known actions taken by the defendant. No report to law enforcement, no missing person posters, no inquiries. Similarly with JJ, little 7-year-old boy. The defendant said he was dark. He was possessed. She told people this. There's messages about it. But again, what you won't hear is that when JJ went missing, that the defendant did anything. There are no known actions by the defendant to find JJ. No report to law enforcement. No missing person posters. No inquiries. You will hear how she described JJ's behaviors to others in an attempt to get them to agree that he must not be JJ anymore, that an evil spirit must have taken over his body. And you will hear how she was very convincing. You'll hear from witnesses how they believed what Lori told them. She was likable, energetic, and they believed her. They wanted to believe her. They wanted to follow Lori. They wanted what she was saying to be true. You will also hear how she told a friend of hers named April Raymond, who's another woman that you will hear from, that when she got divorced, that JJ would need to go live with Charles, his father, and that Charles would have to figure out what to do with him. And part of why she talked about this was that the defendant was also telling people that she was here on a mission. She was here on a religious mission to gather the 144,000. So she needed to spend her time and energy there so JJ could go live with Charles, because she had other things to do. She had more important things to do than care for her child. She expressed to people that what she did here on earth no longer counted for her. You'll hear how she'd hit her hand. Doesn't count for me. Doesn't count for me. She explained this to others by telling them that she was a translated being, and you'll hear more about that and what they taught with regards to that. But she convinced others that they were also in the translation process. Again, she's very convincing. People wanted to believe her. People trusted her. But what it really was she and Chad using their proposed religious beliefs and teaching to manipulate those around them into not questioning their actions and what they were doing. Their actions did not always comport with their teachings, and so you'll hear how those teachings evolved. They changed over time to justify or to support the actions of the defendant and Chad Daybell. You will hear how the defendant told others, because she was translated, she didn't have to repent. Again, doesn't count for me. You'll also hear how when she and Alex first moved here, Alex was setting the Wi-Fi password. He tells Lori in a message, "I set the password. Too many kids." Lori's short response, "Funny." That's before the kids went missing when they moved here. In the month or so after her children were last seen, what you will hear is the defendant went on several trips. She went on a trip to Arizona, and that trip was around October 9th of 2019. And that's a date that you will hear about. The defendant went to Arizona to visit her niece, Melanie Boudreau, also known as Melanie Pulowski, another individual that you will hear more about and you will hear from during this trial. While she was down visiting her niece, Zulema Pastenis came over. And Lori led a casting on Tammy. Meanwhile, back in Idaho, what you will hear is on October 9th of 2019, that same day, Tammy came home from work, parked her car, went to get things out of the back, and came face to face with a masked man holding a gun and pointing at her. You will hear how Tammy heard a couple pops and the gunman ran off. What you will also hear is that later, a phone call was overheard between Lori and an unknown individual. Lori was mad. On October 9th of 2019, she was mad, and she made a statement along the lines of, "He can't do anything right." What we also know is that there were some phone calls that night between she and at least Chad Daybell. Not long after that trip to Arizona, you will hear how Lori then traveled to Missouri with her niece, Melanie. And while in Missouri, they visited some sites, and then they met up with an individual named Audrey Martario, another woman that you will hear more about and you will hear from during this trial. And while they were there in Missouri, Lori led another casting on Tammy. By this time, you'll hear that the defendant and Chad had determined Tammy was dark. Tammy was possessed. She was possessed by an evil spirit named Viola. Shortly after the trip to Missouri, you will hear how Lori then traveled to Hawaii. She traveled to Hawaii again with her niece Melanie, and Audrey joined them while they were there. And Lori was actually in Hawaii at the time of Tammy's death on or about October 19th of 2019. What you won't hear with any of these trips that the defendant went on, you won't hear about JJ or Tylee because they weren't with her. They weren't with her when she went to Arizona. They weren't with her when she went to Missouri, and they were not with her when she went to Hawaii. But what you will hear about is how the defendant was still spending their money. She was also sending her other son, Colby, money using Tylee's phone. So Tylee's phone was with her, but Tylee wasn't. You will hear how when she was in Hawaii, she was in constant or consistent contact with Chad. You'll hear how just after Tammy died, she hurried back to Idaho. And just after returning to Idaho, you will hear how the defendant began to insert herself into Chad Daybell's life. It was as if Tammy never existed. The defendant met his kids, came to his house, and Chad started to introduce her to some of his friends. And you will hear how Chad introduced her to some of his neighbors a little over a week after Tammy's passing. And you'll hear from those neighbors, those friends of Chad's. And you will hear how when they were introduced to Lori for the first time, she and Chad couldn't keep their hands off each other. Tammy hasn't been dead that long. They talk about plans to get married. But maybe most interestingly, Chad Daybell makes a statement when Lori's asked about kids, that she had a young daughter that had recently died. Lori says nothing about JJ. No mention of a young son. No correcting Chad on the whereabouts or if her daughter was alive or not. Just some indication about, well, I've got some stepkids. Not long after that meeting, the defendant was in Hawaii on a beach marrying Chad Daybell. They got married in Hawaii on November 5th of 2019. You will hear how the defendant had actually begun looking for malachite wedding rings as early as May of 2019. You will hear how the malachite stone was important to them. What you will also hear is on their wedding day, they exchanged malachite rings. And in May of 2019, when the defendant was looking for those rings, both of their spouses were alive and well. You will hear also how Chad Daybell began checking into adding the defendant to his health insurance policy. And when he went to fill out that application, you will hear how he said, no minor children. There's no minors that need to be added to this policy, just the defendant. You'll hear how similarly he was looking for a rental property for them in Hawaii. And on that application, same thing, no minor children, just Chad and Lori, just Chad and the defendant, just the way they wanted it. On November 26th of 2019, law enforcement showed up at the apartments located at 565 Pioneer Road in Rexburg, Idaho. They were looking for JJ. It was still unknown that Tylee was missing at this point. Chad Daybell was there with Alex Cox, and law enforcement made contact with them. Finally, later that same day, they were able to contact the defendant regarding the whereabouts of JJ. The defendant was less than forthcoming with law enforcement at that time. She told law enforcement that JJ was with her friend Melanie Gibb in Arizona. The problem with this? She'd told Melanie JJ was with Kay Woodcock, his grandmother. Problem with that? Kay Woodcock is the one that had reported JJ missing to law enforcement. So where was JJ? And where was Tylee for that matter? The defendant did not cooperate in locating them. Instead, when law enforcement returned, she'd cleared out her apartment and moved to Hawaii with Chad, her new husband. While Chad and Lori were starting their new life together in Hawaii, law enforcement had begun a massive search for JJ and Tylee. It became a nationwide search for those children. As they were searching for the children and beginning their investigation, they talked to Melanie Gibb, because Lori had said that JJ was with Melanie. Melanie had been asked to not talk to law enforcement by Chad. She'd been asked to tell law enforcement JJ was with her by Lori, even so far as Lori saying, snap a picture of some kids. Send it to law enforcement, basically. Melanie Gibb wasn't sure what to do, but eventually she came forward to law enforcement and said, JJ was never with me. Never had him. Don't know where he is. Because of everything that had gone on, Melanie Gibb, on December 8th of 2019, decides to place a phone call to Chad and the defendant. She wants to know, where's JJ? And why did you ask me to tell law enforcement he was with me? What's going on? She recorded that conversation. And what we know from that conversation and what you will hear is the defendant refused to disclose where JJ was, but claimed he was happy. Claimed, and ultimately ended up saying she knew exactly where JJ was. I remind you, JJ was last seen on September 22nd of 2019. This is December 8th of 2019. And I'll remind you how JJ was found. And yet the defendant's statement to Melanie Gibb was, I know exactly where he is. When confronted about Tammy's death, the defendant indicated they did what they had to do. Now remember, Chad and Lori had determined Tammy was dark. And if someone's dark and castings don't work, the body has to be destroyed. They did what they had to do. The defendant and Chad did what they had to do to remove any and every obstacle that was in their way of getting exactly what they wanted. On December 11th of 2019, Tammy was removed from her resting place to be examined. And it was determined by the Office of the Utah Medical Examiner that Tammy died at the hands of another and that the cause of her death was asphyxiation. You will hear how around the time of Tammy's exhumation, Alex Cox made a statement along the lines of, I hope I'm not their fall guy. What exactly Alex meant by this, or what he knew, we may never know, because Alex Cox died the next day on December 12th of 2019. What we do know, though, is there were communications between Alex Cox, the defendant, and Chad Daybell. We know in those conversations there was discussions of people being light and dark, and we know the location of Alex's phone and Chad's phone on certain dates and times. We know that on October 9th of 2019, the day Tammy was confronted by a masked gunman, that Alex Cox's phone had been in the area earlier in the day, driving by where the Daybell residence is located. The only person Alex Cox knew in the Salem area was Chad Daybell. We know that on September 9th of 2019, the morning after the last day Tylee is seen, we know Alex Cox's phone is in Chad Daybell's backyard on his property close to where Tylee's remains are found. We also know around that same time, Chad Daybell's phone is there on his property close to where Tylee's body is found. We also know from other witnesses that Alex Cox would do whatever the defendant and Chad asked him to do. He was loyal to them to a fault. You have already heard from the state that we have the burden in this case, but I want to reiterate that. We as the state have the burden to prove each and every element beyond a reasonable doubt. You have heard that term and you will hear it again, reasonable doubt. The court is the judge of the law, and the judge will give you the definition of the law. And the judge will specifically provide a definition of reasonable doubt, and you follow his definition. But I will say reasonable doubt is commonly defined as a doubt that would cause a reasonable person to hesitate to act. And I would emphasize reasonable. The defendant is charged with multiple crimes, and you just heard him in the indictment. Conspiracy to commit first-degree murder and grand theft in relation to the death of Tylee Ryan, her daughter. First-degree murder in relation to the death of Tylee Ryan, her daughter. Conspiracy to commit first-degree murder and grand theft in relation to J.J. Vallow, her son. First-degree murder in relation to J.J. Vallow, her son. Conspiracy to commit first-degree murder in relation to Tammy Daybell, and grand theft for the taking of the Social Security monies. Again, the judge will advise you on the law, but keep in mind that when we talk about the term conspiracy, it is two or more persons combining or conspiring, so essentially a meeting of the minds to commit some crime. And then one of those actors, just one, has to do an overt act in furtherance of that conspiracy. Only one person has to do it, and there only has to be one overt act. What that means is the defendant doesn't have to be the one that physically ended anyone's life for her to be guilty of conspiracy. If you determine that there was a meeting of the minds and one actor did one overt act in furtherance of that. Similarly, in the state of Idaho, Idaho law allows for someone to be charged as a principal. When someone is charged as a principal to a crime, it can include them directly committing the act, aiding and abetting in its commission, or it can include them having advised and encouraged its commission, or commanding or coercing another to commit the crime. So similarly, when you're hearing about the first degree murder, the defendant did not have to physically end someone's life for her to be guilty. First-degree murder is deliberate, willful, and premeditated actions causing someone to die. Mind you, and circling back, when Tylee was found, as we talked about, all that was found was charred remains. Tylee's hands are gone. When JJ was found, his hands were bound and duct taped in front of his body. When Tammy was found, those hands, she was described as a computer whiz, never going to do anything on a computer again. And the defendant and Chad Daybell, getting married on a beach in Hawaii, starting their life together, all obstacles gone. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I thank you for being here today and your willingness to serve on the jury. We recognize that you do have a task here, and you are the judge of facts, and I would let you know that that is the most important job in this courtroom. This is set to be a long trial, and you're going to sit through a lot of evidence and a lot of testimony. What we ask you to do is be attentive to the testimony and evidence presented. Apply your common sense and reasonableness in weighing the evidence. Give every piece of evidence and testimony the weight you think it is due. Hold us to our burden, and we feel that if you apply your reason and common sense, I'm confident that you will return a verdict of guilty in this case. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Ms. Blake. That will conclude the opening statements for the state of Idaho. Will the defense be giving an opening statement now, or do you wish to defer until later?
I'll give one now, Your Honor.
All right, thank you, Mr. Archibald. You can present your opening now.
Like the state of Idaho, I also thank you for your service. This is a difficult case, a case we have not been able to settle without you. And that's why you've been called here to help us settle this case. If the court will allow a brief introduction, I know a lot about you with your 20-page questionnaires, so I'd like to just make a brief introduction of the defense. I've been an attorney since 1991. I've been both a private attorney and a public defender. And in small county Idaho, there's a lot of us lawyers who do both public defense work and private work. And so over the past 32 years, I've done a bit of both. I've been assigned to 27 murder cases over the course of my career, and they're difficult. They're difficult cases. I was assigned to this case. I'm paid by the taxpayers, and so thank you for paying your taxes. I've had a general practice where I do a little bit of everything, and then I get about one of these difficult cases a year assigned to me, and we do what we can. What does a defense lawyer do? We make sure that our client's constitutional rights are protected. We make sure that the government does its job. We make sure that proof beyond a reasonable doubt is in place before there's a decision. So with these difficult cases, we resolve 99% of our cases. Less than 1% of cases actually make it to trial. And so I believe the state and the defense, we generally do a good job of resolving our disputes. And sometimes when we can't, then we call on you to resolve it for us. I'm being assisted in this case by John Thomas. He's been an attorney since 1999. He has also both experience in private law firms and public defender's offices, where he's handled many, many serious cases. He's received many accolades for his lawyering, and I appreciate him helping me. I also am being assisted by Brandon Hobbs. You've probably seen him, and he's an investigator, and so he's helped us investigate this case. being a defense lawyer isn't always a popular job. So I appreciate you being respectful towards me, and I'll do the same. I'll be respectful towards you. Some 8 years ago, my law office got bombed, and so some people are really upset by what I do for a living. And so I appreciate you and your ability to decide the facts of this case without emotion overriding your decision. So this case is about Lori Vallow Daybell. The prosecutor has just told you what the government hopes to prove throughout the next month. So what's this story about from our defense perspective? And how does this story include you? So the evidence will show that Lori was born and raised in California. She's lived in California, Texas, Arizona, and Hawaii. She lived in Idaho for less than a month before the event of what you're here to decide. She's one of six children. Her parents are still alive. They're retired. She's had an older sister and a brother die, and she also has a sister and a brother still living. She believes in life after death, and she believes she will see her deceased family, including her children, again. She's a beautician by trade. She's worked hard for years in that profession. She's a mother of three, stepmother of two, and is now a grandmother of two children. The evidence will show that people were attracted to her, as the state has told you. They've been attracted to her pretty smile, her vivacious personality, her fun-loving, happy-go-lucky personality. People wanted to be around her. Her oldest son is Colby Ryan. He was born in 1996 in Texas. He's a handsome young man. He currently lives in Arizona. He has two children of his own, making Lori a grandma. Her oldest daughter, Tylee Ryan, was born in 2002 in Texas. She was a ray of sunshine. She had health problems, pancreatitis, a painful and debilitating disease, but Tylee did the best she could. Her marriage to Joe Ryan ended, and a painful, long, drawn-out custody battle ensued, and it was hard on all of them. The evidence will show that her next husband, Charles Vallow, was smitten with her, and she with him. He had two kids, she had two kids, and the blended family lasted over a decade. Lori was such a good, responsible mother to her two children that her husband's sister, Kay Woodcock, wanted her to adopt a special needs toddler newborn. Kay Woodcock was the grandma to a child born in Louisiana in 2012, a child with special needs. The child's parents couldn't take care of him because of their own personal problems. Apparently, Kay Woodcock couldn't take care of him either. So she asked her brother, Charles, and his wife, Lori, if they would adopt him, and they agreed. So the child born in Louisiana to struggling parents was adopted by Charles and Lori Vallow in 2014. And he became known as J.J. Vallow, Lori's third child. The evidence will show that Lori was a dutiful wife to Charles Vallow. They both worked hard, he at the office and she at home. She was a kind and loving mother to her children. The evidence will show she had a particular interest in religion in the end of times. You'll recognize the quote-unquote end of times as something spoken of in the Holy Bible, the New Testament. Most of you will understand when I say that. Some people could care less about biblical prophecies. some people care a lot about it. Thankfully, in this country, we get to worship how we choose. The evidence will show that once Lori and her friends met Chad Daybell, an author on religious subjects, her beliefs began to morph and to change. And that's where you come into this story, because the stories diverge. So we haven't been able to agree on what happened, and we need you to decide it. So what happened? How did these children die? Who was involved? When did it happen? Where did it happen? Why? Why did it happen? The judge has read to you the allegations, the charges. And they were read to you 2 weeks ago when you showed up to fill out your questionnaire. They were read again today. And I'm going to read parts of them again, because I think it's important to see what she's charged with. And you don't have to write these down, by the way. The jury instructions will be with you in the jury room. Some of you are really good note takers, and some of you will let others take notes. But you don't need to memorize what I'm telling you, because these will be printed out and handed to you in the jury room. So the charge of conspiracy, Chad, Lori, Alex, deceased. Other co-conspirators, both known and unknown. So Chad Daybell is not on trial here. Alex Cox is not on trial here. He's deceased. Other co-conspirators, I don't know much about that, both known and unknown. So again, your focus will be on the actions of Lori, not on Chad, not on Alex, not on co-conspirators, both known and unknown. So that's the conspiracy. I think first-degree murder, the allegations contained in the charge that the judge read to you, was Lori Vallow concerned in the commission of first-degree murder? Did she aid and abet? Did she assist somehow? Or, the language of the charge says, or not being present, did she advise and encourage it to happen? Or, by command, compelled another? So, this charge is, did she kill? Or, did she assist? Or, did she encourage? Or did she command? So in other words, this charge is saying they're not sure what happened, but yet they want you to be sure. The same with count 3 and count 4 with JJ. Count 5 with Tammy. Did she combine or conspire to commit murder? Did she do the murder? Or did she talk about it? Or did she do something about it? Or did she do an act in furtherance of it? So that's the challenge here for you, is you're going to be given all these alternatives, and you're going to have to be convinced beyond a reasonable doubt. I didn't make up the definition for reasonable doubt, neither did the judge, neither did the prosecutors. But that's our law. He read it to you 2 weeks ago and again this morning, and here it is. Under our law and system of justice, every defendant is presumed to be innocent. This means two things. First, the state has the burden of proving the defendant guilty. The state has that burden throughout the trial. The defendant is never required to prove her innocence, nor does the defendant ever have to produce any evidence at all. The state must prove the crime beyond a reasonable doubt. A reasonable doubt is not mere possible or imaginary doubt. It is a doubt based on reason and common sense. It may arise from a careful and impartial consideration of all the evidence or from lack of evidence. So if you have a lack of evidence and that's reasonable to you, you're our reasonable people here for the next month. That's a reasonable doubt. If after considering all the evidence or the lack of evidence, you have a reasonable doubt about Lori's guilt, you must find her not guilty. All these papers in here, I lost my way. So, there's something called an alibi that was filed as part of this response, part of these allegations. So here's the alibi that was filed on Lori's behalf. Lori Vallow was in her own apartment in Rexburg, Idaho, when J.J. Vallow and Tylee Ryan died in the apartment of Alex Cox in Rexburg, Idaho. Lori was with Melanie Gibb, David Warwick, and or Chad Daybell. And Lori was in Hawaii when Tammy Daybell died at the home of Chad Daybell in Salem, Idaho. Lori was with Melanie Bedreau and or Audrey Barataria in Hawaii. So that's the alibi filed in this case. And a lot of jurors were excused in this case because of pretrial publicity. We asked you a lot of questions about that, what you knew, what you heard, what if you can set it aside. And so far, still, no evidence has been presented to you. So my client is still presumed innocent. And the publicity that has tainted so many people throughout the county, through the state, through the nation, that's not evidence. And so I appreciate all of you stating that anything that you may have heard, a lot of you didn't hear anything, so thank you. But for those of you who did hear something, you can set that aside and start this trial with Lori with a clean slate. You're here to focus on what she did, not on what Chad Daybell did or what Alex Cox did. You're here to determine if there even was a conspiracy. Cases, again, can be solved with evidence. They can be solved with lack of evidence. And when there's lack of evidence, the law calls it not guilty. You said you would be fair and impartial. You said you would have an open mind to not judge her until you heard all the evidence in this courtroom. You said you would do your duty, and I believe you. If what the state has alleged here cannot be proven beyond a reasonable doubt, you said you would find her not guilty. Thank you for your attention.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Archibald. That will conclude the opening statement of the defense. In just a moment, we'll take a mid-morning break. Pursuant, again, to our order in this courtroom, you're allowed on the break to leave and then be reseated once the break is done. One comment I wanted to make as it related to the note-taking and what was said in openings, and I'll confirm that you will be provided all of the instructions at your deliberations. This is a long trial, and so I wanted to confirm that is, in fact, the case, that the instructions that provide both the law, the charging language of the indictment, and other things will be provided to you in copies there. So don't worry that you need to get all that down in notes during the course of the trial. So with that in mind, then, I believe the state will have its first witness ready to call after the mid-morning break. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct.
Okay, and who will be conducting the first examination of the witness?
That will be Rob Wood.
Okay, thank you. Well, with that in mind, then, let's go ahead and take our mid-morning recess. And one last thing, I do appreciate very much the way everybody has conducted themselves during this trial thus far with a capacity courtroom. I very much appreciate everyone complying with those orders and the manner in which we're off to a start here. So we'll take our mid-morning recess and reconvene here in about 15 to 20 minutes.
This is continuous coverage.
Continuous coverage.
Continuous coverage.
In the trial of Lori Vallow Daybill from the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Hidden Killers Podcast.
There is much more to come. Press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. You don't miss a minute of our coverage. Get an ad-free version of it when you sign up through Apple Podcasts right now as a premium subscriber. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SPINQUEST.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SPINQUEST.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.